The girl was slender but healthy, and her skin glowed. She had an innocent face, but wore a tight, calf-length dress that was cut low in the back. She looked sexy. She looked perky. What can I say? The guy was really sharp, too. He looked extremely robust, the picture of a vital, hopeful young man, except for those dark eyes. There was a glint of craziness in those eyes, which made me wonder about what he might have inherited from his father. For some reason, they were always smiling. They just stood there talking, and laughing and smiling at one another. As I gazed at them, I realized that I had witnessed something like this before. One day, a long time before, I took a walk over to the botanical garden not far from home. Inside, I saw a mother stretched out on the broad lawn, a baby in her arms. The warm rays of the setting sun bathed the grass in a brilliant yellow-green, and no one else was around. The young mother lay the child down on a white towel. She didn't play with the baby or talk to it, but instead just sat there gazing at it. Now and again, she looked up at the sky, deep in thought. Her hair blew gently in the breeze, glowing in the sunlight. It was a still scene, not unlike a Wyeth painting, with intensely dark shadows against the light. I saw it as an omniscient narrator would, a portrait of an eternal sunset in which happiness and sadness became one. Something similar happened when I was looking at the Takases, the melancholy of a brilliant evening sky. Perhaps that was an indication of the talent that flowed in their veins, something that neither youth nor idle pleasures could suppress. I asked Shoji, "Have you decided to translate Sarao Takase's stories?" "That's my plan," he said proudly. "What's the book called, anyway? Some initials or something?"
"NP."
"What does that stand for?"
"North Point."
"North Point? I don't get it."
"It's the title of an old song."
"What kind of song?"
"A very sad one," he replied.
Chapter 2. That day, the phone shook me from a deep sleep. Still in bed, I groped for the receiver. "Hi, Kazami. It's me. How are you doing?" I heard my older sister's low voice float out of the receiver. The choppy sound you always get on international calls brought me to my senses. "What's wrong?" "Oh, everything's fine. I just wanted to hear your voice," my sister said.
"You forgot the time difference again. It's 5 o'clock in the morning here," I said.
"Sorry."
"What time is it there?"
8 at night.
This time difference thing made me feel really strange. I was thankful for that telephone line, the only thing that connected me to my sister. "How are you?" I asked.
"I just wanted you to know that I dreamed about you the other night," my sister said. "In the dream, I saw you walking through the neighborhood, holding hands with an older man."
"What neighborhood? Your neighborhood in London?"
"Right, back there behind the church."
"Wow, sounds good to me," I said happily. I knew that my sister's dreams did, in fact, often come true.
"Yeah. But you know, you both looked sad, and I couldn't talk to you. The guy was tall and kind of high-strung looking, and had on a white sweater. You were wearing your student uniform, so I thought that maybe you were having an affair with some older guy just to make a point."
"No way."
A chill ran down my spine, even as the words came out of my mouth. That had to have been me walking with Shoji in her dream. But my sister never knew about Shoji. "Oh no, I've lost my touch," she said.
"Don't worry, it happens to the best of us."
But my mind was working furiously. Was this an omen? It was true. He had been on my mind a lot then,